Bula Network, episode number 104. Greetings from the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. This is BulaNetwork.com. Coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, where it is currently Friday, October the 14th, 2011. And no, I'm not going to apologize for being off schedule because, well, I've done that too many weeks in the past. I don't know. We'll figure this out eventually. Hey, I'm glad that you're here. If you are listening via iTunes, well, congrats on that, and I appreciate it. I'd love it if you'd leave me a review over at iTunes. Or if you're listening via RSS feed, hey, all the better. Or if you are at the website, well, hey, even better still. You can find the show notes for today's episode at BulaNetwork.com. And you'll find us, obviously, under episode 104. I want to talk to you about if-then statements. Well, actually, they're kind of if-then systems. Among the most important work of building any business are a couple of things. Well, maybe three. Well, there's obviously more. But for the sake of this conversation, when we're talking about if-then statements or if-then systems. And in programming, it simply is, well, if this happens, then this other thing happens. If one thing happens, then that triggers a reaction. That triggers yet another action. And I find so many small business owners, so many small business people, they don't have enough if-then systems built into their system. Some of the things that are really critical for your business, and it doesn't matter how large or small it is. One is you necessarily have to get what's in your head out of your head and documented somewhere. Now, in today's world, we have this cloud-based stuff, and so it's great. It's great because we can have this central repository of all of this great knowledge that we have in our head. And not just your head, but those other people in your company who do really important work. You know the ones. The ones who, if that bus were to run over them and hit them, heaven forbid, that, well, your life would be turned upside down. Because they know what they know and nobody else knows it. So you need to think about getting what's in your head, the knowledge in your head, out of your head and in some central place where it's accessible to your organization. For decades, I've been a huge believer in learning organizations. My personal conviction is only learning organizations remain viable over time. It's one thing, particularly in a technology-based kind of a business, for somebody to come up with some bright idea, some new technology, some new whiz-bang thing, and they hit the market, and, well, you know, their new whiz-bang thing gets replaced later on by somebody else who has a newer, whizzier bang thing, and all of a sudden, they're out of work. Company, they're done. It's really crucial in your business, and it doesn't matter how mundane your enterprise may seem, there are things that you know, and you need to get those documented some way, somehow. And yes, my advice is to do it in some cloud-based technology so that it's accessible to whomever needs to have access to it. Now, you may not want to share everything with everybody. I get that. That's fine. But the objective is to get it out of your head and get it down somewhere. The other component of that, kind of a sidebar to that, is we really have got to be we've really got to work on closing what Bob Sutton calls the knowing-doing gap. That is, that gap between what we know we should be doing and what we're actually doing. I find a lot of people, well, they think, you know, I don't know enough. I need to know more. I need to learn more. And in almost every case, I can sit down and I can ask some pointed questions, and very quickly it becomes apparent that they are not yet doing everything they know to do. So how about we just start there? Let's forget about what we don't know. Let's focus on what we do know, and let's start doing that. And once we're doing that, now let's keep adding to our knowledge base. The second thing that I think is important in the work of building any business is to get processes and systems built so that we can deliver what I typically have called sustainable or predictable success. And what we are obviously looking for is we want to replicate. We don't want to be able to do stellar work just one time. We don't want excellence to just, okay, hey, all of a sudden we caught lightning in a bottle and it just worked out for us. And man, we delivered spectacular results that time, but boy, it doesn't happen very often. Now, some people call it scale. Some people, including me, call it sustainability. And whatever you call it, it's urgent that every business have some kind of a workflow that will enable the delivery of the service or the product to be excellent every single time. The exception, that is poor service, well, yeah, it should be just that. It should be the exception, not the rule. But for too many people, poor service is the rule. It's kind of sad to me to encounter so many small business owners who confess to me that one of the things that they find themselves doing daily. Now, I want you to get this. And if this is you, you're going to be especially interested in today's show, if you're not already. They confess to me that daily, a big component of what they do is they apologize to their customers. Don't let that be you. That is a bad, bad way to go through a day. I mean, boy, there's a lot more fun things to do than have to pick up the phone or make contact via email or any other way and fall on the sword and tell a customer, you know, I'm sorry that this happened. I'm sorry that that happened. You know, I promise we're going to make good on it. No. Spend your time. Now, listen, we all have to do that on occasion. But spend your time making sure you don't have to apologize. Spend your time making sure that you are able to deliver excellence every single time. Now, a third component of that I believe is important in business building is to have not only systems in place that can become second nature, but when they do become second nature, now we have to consider putting things on, well, for lack of a better word, autopilot. Yeah, that's two words, isn't it? Hyphenated, though. To automate, if you please. Now, I'm not talking about some autopilot thing where you never have to lift a finger. I'm talking about something that you now can put in place. Well, for instance, this might involve lower cost labor executing some activities that, well, previously they were done by more skilled people. But now, over time, you've been able to put some systems in place, and you've now been able to document how things should happen. Well, I can give you a perfect example. I won't name names. But I have a client who embarked on templatizing email. In our discussions, it was apparent that the inbox was a real serious problem, and we began to examine the inbox, and we began to look at the variety of different messages that were coming in. Now, many of these didn't require any response at all. Some did, and some required a different response than others, and still yet others demanded yet a different response. And over time, it was fleshed out that about nearly a dozen different kinds of templated responses could really make an impact on inbox management. Now, beginning to do that, so we have a system in place, and now that system, well, once it became very clear that this was a workable solution, and once it became clear that this could be, for this person, just kind of an automated thing, second nature kind of stuff, well, now it was time to put it in the hands of a virtual assistant. Now it was time to put it in the hands of someone who could be hired for a lower sum of money than what this person's time was worth. Pretty easy math. Oh, you haven't calculated what your time is worth? Well, there's a problem. You need to do that. So if a person is making a certain amount of money, and it's very easy to determine, if you calculate a 40-hour work week and you multiply that times 52, you come up with 2,080 hours. Now, if you take your annual earnings, your income, divide that by 2,080, well, there you have it. That's what you're worth an hour. That's what your time is worth by the hour. Well, now it becomes quite easy to do some very simple math. And if that number, if that hourly number is $100, let's say, just for the sake of conversation, does it really pay for me to spend my time doing something that I could hire someone else to do for, let's say, $25 an hour? Well, I don't know about you, but I'll trade $25 an hour for $100 an hour all day long, every day. I will readily open my wallet, give you $25 in exchange for $100, and I will do that all day long, every day. Well, and of course you would too. Anybody would. Now, let's address the elephant in the room, because all this boils down to a very simple, easier said than done approach to business building. And it really boils down to, if this happens, then here's what our business does to respond. Well, that's what it is. I mean, that's what this whole if-then kind of thing is about. Now, we all feel the stresses, and the stresses that we feel in our business, oftentimes those tend to stem from our inability, or our business's inability, our company's inability to properly handle all of the demands. And it doesn't matter what it is. Is cash flow a problem for you? Is meeting payroll a problem for you? Is lead generation a problem for you? Deal flow. It doesn't matter what the challenge is, because all of these challenges can be fixed with an improvement to more consistently deliver superior value in answer to all of the demands that are put upon us. I mean, just take something as seemingly important as cash flow. Every business must have some cash flow. Well, if cash flow is a problem, it's one thing to say, well, we need more cash. Well, duh. The question is how? How do we do it? But maybe the bigger question oftentimes is, well, how do we prevent from getting ourselves behind this cash flow eight ball month after month? Well, it's not very complex. And usually in a matter of, well, in a matter of minutes, sometimes hours, it's quite easy when you sit down, you start dissecting things and you start looking at the line items of things and expenditures and all the various components that make up what happens every day in a business, to kind of pinpoint, well, here's where we're bleeding cash, and here's where we might be coming up short. And it can be all over the board. I've been involved in helping businesses who had an accounts receivable that would choke a mule. And you think, how in the world have you allowed this many accounts to get 120 days past due? I mean, you've got boatloads of cash that are out there, but they're not in your coffers because you aren't doing a good job collecting the money that's due to you. And trust me, there's an awful lot of companies that are in that kind of stressful water. Now, I think among the big challenges that face most small businesses and most small business owners is this one. How can we say yes? And I'm going to kind of reverse the whip on you and say, not only is it how can we say yes to this thing that we need to say yes to, but how can we say no to this thing that we really need to say no to? I tend to start with some basic decisions that have to be made, and they have to be made at the top. Decisions that must be made by the leader, by the owner, to put the business in the best position possible for success. Because success is based on financial results. It's based on the number of happy customers. It's based on how many customers will recommend our company. It's based on happy employees. And it's based on ongoing innovation and creativity. Now, those are my definitions, and you may have your own, but I dare say that your definitions, even if they vary slightly from mine, you know, we're going to kind of be like-minded and probably in agreement on those things. Financial results, the number of happy customers, how many customers will recommend our company. Not all happy customers are going to be recommending us. Happy employees and ongoing innovation and creativity. We need, in my opinion, those five things so that our businesses can be successful. Now, the solution is also the problem, and the problem is TLC. No, it doesn't stand for Tender Loving Care. It stands for time, logistics, and communication. Time, logistics, and communication. That is our problem, and that is also our solution. But again, we have something else that we've got to come to grips with. But let's define these terms first. Time is an obvious problem. We just simply don't have enough of it, ever. Logistics is a multifaceted problem because it is who and where all at the same time. Right? I mean, we have this question. Well, who has it? Well, where are they with it? Simply put, logistics is workflow. It's how we get things done, and we do it with the help of other people. And every business tends to have the question. It's just kind of funny how often it comes up. Well, who's got it? You know, it's monkey, monkey. Who's got the monkey? Well, who's got the monkey, and how long have they had it, and what are they doing with it? Logistics. Communication, well, that may be obvious, but communication is both internal and external. It's how we talk, what we say, when we say it. And it involves every aspect of communication that we have with people inside the company or those people that we work with directly. It could be our suppliers. It could be our vendors. It could be our partners. It could be anybody who is associated with our serving customers. But it's also how we communicate in all forms with our prospects and with our customers. Now, here's the one component with this TLC, time, logistics, and communication, that you must be aware of. And you know this already. I think you intuitively know this already, but here it is. Emotion. Because every element of TLC evokes emotions, either positive. Well, let's define those. Positive emotions, calming, excitement, intrigue, comfort, happiness. Or every element of TLC evokes negative emotions, fear, dread, anxiety, depression, unhappiness. And so it's very important that your business establish some basic guidelines and expectations to build a time logistics communication, a TLC model that is effective in building the most successful business possible. Now, let me give you an obvious truth. Here's the obvious truth. If the business suffers, everybody associated with that business suffers. And if a business thrives, everybody associated with that business, well, they all benefit. Now, what that means is that every decision has to be congruent with the purpose of the business. And so, well, so we kind of begin with the end in view. What's the purpose of your business? Money. Well, of course. But you know, that's an outcome. And for too many businesses, it's just a hopeful outcome of what that business does. The purpose is something deeper, though. The purpose is something more important. Oh, what? There's something more important than money? Well, of course. Well, let me give you one. I've already mentioned it. Time. Time is more important than money. You can earn more money. You will never create more time. And this kind of first component of TLC, it presses on us how the purpose of our business has to be focused on one big question. And that question very simply is this: how do you want to spend your time? How do you want to spend your days? You know, I encounter people all the time who have lofty aspirations, and they see other people and they see the success of other people, and they say, well, that's what I want. The problem is they don't know what they don't know. And what they don't know is that perhaps that person is living this horribly autocratic, obsessive life spent in 80-hour weeks agonizing with their strong type A personality, all of the little nuances and all the minute details and all the micromanaging that goes on, and they are living a miserable life. Oh, they may have nice cars. Oh, they may live in the proper address, but their quality of life is absolutely horrible. Well, you say, well, no, I don't want to spend my time. I don't want to spend my days doing that. Well, then the question is, what do you want to do with your time? And we're talking about for a living, so the answer can't be, well, I want to spend more time with my family. Well, that's kind of a patented answer, isn't it? And I know people who give that answer, and I know flat out they're lying. They don't any more want to spend time with family than a man on the moon, but that's what they say. Well, because it's politically correct and everybody admires it, so, you know. I know some people, if they were honest, they would say, I tell you what I want to do with my time. I want to spend my time as far away from my family as I can. Oh, but we would think, oh, they're horrible. And it is horrible. I mean, it's horrible that somebody's in a situation like that, but the world's full of people like that. What do you want to spend your time doing for a living? Specifically, what do you want to do with your working time? And every successful person, and in our case, we're talking about business people, they have to determine how they'd like to spend their time. And every day people get up and they do something. And it's that something that we do that determines our daily purpose. It establishes who we are. It defines us. And we fight against it. We can even deny it. But when all is said and done, it's what's done that defines who we are and what kind of business we build, and not what we say. But I mentioned a really important word, and it might have slipped past you, but I'm not going to let you, I'm not going to end without us talking about it. And that is the term congruent. Congruent. If everything is important, nothing is important. And establishing priorities is one of the most important decisions that face every business owner. It forms the foundation for the entire business. Openly and subtly, it tells everybody what we value the most. Now, business owners often make a mistake of making everything important. How often have you heard this? Sweat the details. No detail is too small. Or the devil is in the details. Well, I've got a newsflash for you. It's a cowardly way of justifying their poor management style. Because the fact is, not all details are important. Now, the autocrat, and the autocrat is simply a person who has absolute singular authority, and they rule with an iron fist more often than not, and they are unmoved by input from anybody else. They are the center of their own universe. Well, no, better yet, they're the center of your universe too, don't you know? And every good idea must be their own. Otherwise, you know, it's a bad idea. And every job in the company, well, they could perform that job better than anybody, but they only suffer the foolishness of others because, well, they're too important to do every job. Now, they're not too important to be the backseat driver behind every decision and behind every action that other people take. They're not too important to second guess and to criticize the foolishness of others. And over time, sooner than later, in many cases, the business realizes that there really are no priorities because every single thing is important because the owner, he or she, their ire is provoked by everything. And people just simply are not able to get a read on what really matters because everything matters. And if everything is important, mark it down. Nothing is important. Now, the practical reality is we all know things have a value based on their relation to other things. The fact is, some things are simply more important than other things. It's important that people in your company draw the proper conclusion. That is, we want people in our companies to quickly learn what matters most. And leadership provides the answer to that. And the way leadership does that is with the establishment of priorities, and it all has to do with being congruent. Let me give you an illustration if you don't fully understand this whole notion of being congruent. Have you ever seen somebody in a place where you didn't expect to see them? Sure, I think we've all done that. Maybe you were accustomed to seeing a person who waits on you regularly at maybe your favorite eating joint. This has happened to me. You know, you go and you frequent this restaurant and there's a particular waiter and they wait on you pretty regularly. And maybe you go there once a week, week after week after week after week. And one evening you get out and about and you're going to a concert and you see somebody and they look, man, where have I seen this person before? We're not able to place them. And as they approach us, all of a sudden it dawns on us who they are. That's the waiter. That's the waiter. He waits on us every week. Why did it take us so long to recognize them? Because in that moment of time, our congruency meter, it's thrown off by the context of this concert. In the restaurant setting, we don't have any problem recognizing them. We fully expect to see them there. That's where we know them. That's congruency. And it is how we all make sense of the world. Now, it is also among one of many components that can help explain why the abused wife might stay with the abusive husband. Well, he says he loves her after he's beaten the crap out of her. He says one thing and he does something different. Wait a minute, time out, Mr. Business Owner. Do you say one thing and do something different ever? Do you send mixed messages to your organization? Well, it happens with the abused wife. And these incongruities, they confuse her. And she's got to make sense of it some way, somehow. And so over time, she convinces herself that his words mean more than his action. She will say, he just loses control sometimes. And don't you love this one? Or, you know, I shouldn't provoke him. And so now she has to make sense of her world. And so she does it any way that she can. And so what she does is, it's my fault. I provoked him. It's completely my fault. I shouldn't have said that to him. And yeah, those of us that are sane think, my land, she's lost her mind. No, she's trying to save her mind. She's trying to save her sanity by making sense of her world. Well, employees and other people associated with our business, they do the same thing. They must make sense of the world. And when ownership says one thing but does something different, or when ownership does one thing and then contradicts that with an opposite action, well, people naturally seek to make some kind of sense out of it all. And so being congruent speaks to every aspect of TLC. Our ability to be congruent with who we are, who we really are, and what we really want, what we think is really important, those send strong, strong signals inside and outside the business. And quite simply, they mean everything to the business. Yeah, there you have it, episode 104. We'll pick it up next time, and I'll start diving a little more deeply into time. The T in the TLC. Now, wasn't that worth waiting for? Sure it was. I'm glad you tuned in. Visit the website at BulaNetwork.com. I got a lot of stuff happening, and one of these days, if you care, I may update you on some of the happenings around here. Lots and lots and lots of changes afoot, and I've been just busy as a one-armed paper hanger. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? I hope you do. My name is Randy Cantrell. The city of origin is Dallas, Texas. Episode 104, it's in the books. This is The Yellow Studio.